On this episode of Doctor Who's That, we talk about Clodagh, dickheads, and how Vic screams real good. Welcome back to Doctor Who's That. I am your Doctor Who expert, Sean Gleason. Joining me as always, we have Bay.
I am recently unfrozen and ready to mingle.
And we have Andy.
And I'm a spacefaring captain with an American accent that's not convincing.
And joining us for this story, we have Tom. Welcome back, Tom.
I am Tom of the Cybermen.
All right, and don't let Tom, don't sell Tom short. Tom, he knows himself a little bit about Doctor Who.
Just a little.
Just a teeny little skosh.
So, today we are talking about our first story of Season 5, Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yes. Sorry.
What a way to start the season, too, boy.
What a banger.
Our working titles included The Cybermen Planet and The Ice Tombs of Talos.
I got to tell you, I immediately, that's a very cool title. I immediately forgot the name of this planet.
Oh, right. Yeah, so did I. Talosians, the Talosian Cybermen. Like, I even know that term, and yet, nope.
So this story aired in September of 1967, and going into our State of the Hoonian, about halfway through our previous story, Peter Bryant took over the role of script editor, and at the start of this story, he took over the producer role for Innes Lloyd, at least while Lloyd's on vacation for this story. This is going to serve as a test to see if Brian could take on the role full time. Hmm. Since, as I've noted, Lloyd has been trying to get off the show for a bit now. Brian's assistant, Victor Pemberton, took over the script editor role, also to test his readiness for that full time role. So I don't really have all that much to say. I just want to point to the Cybermat props. Those Cybermats were controlled in a number of ways by wires.
I was going to say a cable. I thought I saw a cable.
Yeah, some were controlled by cables. Some were wind up. Some of the bigger ones were remote controlled.
Whoa.
And others were simply shoved into the shot when needed.
I actually, so we'll talk a little bit more about the Cybermats. I felt a little bit let down by the Cybermats. Like, it's a cool idea, but I thought that they looked a little cheap. I don't know.
I mean, they definitely did. Although, like, some of the, like,
I like the articulation. The, like, yes. Tail looks pretty mm-hmm. cool.
And some of the, like, separating close-ups were also a little bit, you know, disturbing with, like, their, like, ciliate feet. And
are
you
they
know.
Supposed to have, like, bulgy eyes?
Yeah.
They look like kind of like they've seen some shit.
Or they have made it.
So they were modeled after silverfish.
Yeah.
Oh, figured. Yeah. That makes sense. The feet part reminded me very much of like that one creature from the Zarbi, I think it was.
Oh, gosh.
No, like, there's one that's, like, clearly a person kneeling under.
Oh, yeah, the one that, like, shoots smoke out of a tube, I believe it was.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can we talk?
That's the story that keeps on giving, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Well, we'll never forget that one.
I had forgotten the Tomb of the Cybermen, actually, when New Who brought back the Cybermats, and they had this mouth. I was like, what? Cybermats don't have mouths. Then I rewatched this and I was like, oh, yes, they do.
Well, do you know what? I was watching this and I was like, these are just alien facehuggers. They're just facehuggers.
Okay, can we talk about them?
But they precede them, and like there are a lot of similar features. I mean, like they create more Cybermen, just like the facehuggers create more I almost said xenobites. It's not xenobites. It's
xenomorphs.
Wow! Look at how everybody was like, "I know exactly what that
Johnny is." Johnny on the spot. Okay.
So is that what they do though? Like I wasn't entirely clear. Like, do we actually see, maybe I looked away for a second. Do we actually see them make any Cybermen or just awkwardly jump on faces?
It's not clear what they do actually.
Okay, good.
It seems like it's like the doctor says something about them being attracted to the fear of humans or something.
Yeah, their brainwaves
human
or whatever
brainwaves.
The hell.
Yeah. And it sounded like the Cybermen were going to use them in the process of converting Tobermen. I don't know how, but
yeah.
So it's hard to say what they were meant to do.
It does seem like they were just kind of little stun guns that ran around and took people out.
But it seemed pretty clear to me, like in typical horror fashion, the ending of this serial suggests that they create Cybermen. And
I mean,
getting
yeah.
out, it would be a bad deal.
You know what they reminded me of, actually, now that I'm thinking about it? Did anybody ever see that 70s sci-fi film with Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons, Runaway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, yeah, you should. If you haven't, boy, it's great. it's Tom Selleck, as I've mentioned, Tom Selleck, Gene Simmons. And there's also the... I believe it's the kid from Flight of the Navigator.
Oh my gosh.
And so basically Tom Selleck is like a future cop and his job is to take out like dangerous robots that malfunction. And then all of a sudden there's like these robot spiders that run around killing people and injecting them with acid. And the bad guy's Gene Simmons. Yeah. So yeah, you're kicking yourself now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Go watch it. But like they're very similar and it's very much like a, you know, they kind of like that kind of movement.
It started out as Blade Runner and then like went into something much crazier.
Oh no, it goes this movie goes way off the rails. Oh, and it also has bullets that go around corners, which is like friggin' sweet. It really affected me as a child, I gotta say.
It's been like a couple decades since I've seen it, but
likewise, I'm just putting it on my phone right now. I'm watching that sucker tonight.
Honestly, like something that you said there just reminded me of a horror movie that Shawnee had showed where they're
Screamers.
Like, they're I don't know, they're like these little creatures and they infiltrate. I think they're on a college campus, like
Night of the Creeps.
It might have been. Like they end up having to torch them, I think,
yeah.
in a sorority house.
Yep.
And it's like bonkers.
Yes, it is. Some more about the Cybermat props.
Oh, please.
When they weren't filming, the people controlling the remote control ones would use them to chase Deborah Watling around the set.
Like you do.
So,
welcome to the show.
Yep. So last time we had Dalek controllers using their plungers on her, and now people are chasing her with Cybermats. So
it
she's
was the
having
60s,
a time.
Apparently you could get away with a lot of sexual harassment.
And when they were filming the story, it turned out that the frequency used for the remote control ones was very close to that used by the studio cameras, which apparently caused
wow.
some degree of chaos. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I couldn't find any information on what happened. But, yeah, so Doctor Who coming through again.
When I was reading your synopsis, it was like, wait, they were using the cameras to chase her around the... Oh, no, the Cybermats. Okay.
So, some of our important people. Our director was Morris Barry, who had previously directed The Moon Base.
Nice.
This was, of course, written by our hero Kit Pedler and Jerry Davis.
Fucking Pedler.
I was thinking about you, Andy, when we were watching these, because like his name flashed on screen, and I was like, yes!
Yeah, I saw it, too, and I was like, my man! I knew, and like you could tell which parts like he was definitely involved in too. Like, well, you know, they must communicate with binary code. You must break it down into the powers of two. And I was like, Kit Pedler.
So when Pedler was writing this, he originally meant for Toberman to be deaf.
Oh, it's That's why his lines were so shit.
His hearing aid would be meant to foreshadow his transformation into a Cyberman, which, you know, some kit peddling going on there.
I mean, that could have been cool, but knowing this era and knowing the show, it probably would have been like huge and blinking and even partially Cyberman shaped and like way over the top.
But like, not only that, I mean, on the one hand, it's kind of a cool idea. Like, from a modern standpoint, it's like incredibly cringy and normative to have like someone with a disability foreshadowing, you know, like this inhumanity.
Oh, I don't know. I see where you're going with that.
Toberman is like, was cool, and I was really glad to have like a character of color. So their team had a woman, had women on it, and it had like a person of color, and I'm like, yes, this is progress.
And then it's like, and she's then it was his, like, he's no, her manservant. I guess not.
Yeah, it's my manservant, and
he's got six lines.
He does
most
talk.
Of them are, yes,
he's a manservant. She's oddly tanned, and their associate is a shifty foreigner.
Yeah, it's all very negative.
Whose name is definitely not Krieg.
I don't know.
It's Krieg. Get to try it.
That fucking guy.
Yeah.
Let me also note that Toberman's name sounds awfully close to Tobor Man, which is robot spelled backwards.
Yes.
Oh, I was just thinking the whole time, I could really go for a Toblerone.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was like, is this a slur that I don't know that they're trying to like work in?
Like, I was just thinking, okay, so he's Captain's dog, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man. But yet, I mean, like, come on, we'll get to my thoughts on Toberman in a minute, and hint they are very positive, aside from like what the show did to him, of course. But
this week's Kemmel,
yeah, he 100% he's Kemmel.
Oh yeah,
but like a little less likable
and a couple more lines.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not exactly noble savage kind of thing going on, but there's like definitely like this weird racist primalist undertone thing with the whole thing.
Like basically the whole, you know, he doesn't even hardly speak English, right? So it's just kind of like, ugh.
And he gets like, we have to have him so that he can get Worfed for the rest of the white characters to know, oh, things are really getting bad, you know?
So this story was clearly inspired by mummy movies. In fact, the tomb's layout is very much based on Tutankhamun's.
Really? The layout itself?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not notice that.
That's very cool. I mean, it makes sense with the sarcophagus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's quite the parallel, too. I'm feeling very stupid right now.
And the... the music is just stock music, so nothing special to point out there.
Wait, where did the Cyberman theme come from then?
It's the stock music that they'd been using since the introduction of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's funny that you said that, because I'd pinged on the music and kind of liked how it was used in this one.
Yeah, so me too.
bit of a bummer.
Every time I like it, I find out it's just like, oh yeah, that's something they found on like the floor of like the stock room or whatever. It's like every time I want to call it out. Thank you for saying that early, because I was just about to say, I was like, I really liked their use of music in this one. Like, I think they're stepping up their game. No,
just some stuff they had lying around.
Music costs money. Sets cost money. Costumes cost money. Cybermats cost money.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine that this one cost a good deal of money.
Oh yeah. It looks expensive.
Did anybody else watch it in color while we're at it?
No.
Is it available in color?
Yeah, a whole
Somebody
thing.
Somebody colorized it, yeah.
You found a and colorized not bad. Version.
Hmm. It's not bad.
Wait, so it was colorized? Not
yeah.
Like it,
oh, right. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, no,
yeah.
It didn't air in color. No.
Right. I started to, but it kept stalling, so it was just like, switch to the black and white.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll definitely talk about it, but it was incredibly refreshing, I thought, to see...
motion?
I was going to say a second Doctor serial in its entirety, you know, like actually getting to see him do his stuff, because like as entertaining as the animations have been, and they have been, getting to see his face, I think.
Patrick Troughton has some phenomenal nuance.
Yes, exactly. So,
And it just occurred to me, we did not have one appearance of that friggin' flute whistle thing, which I think also was very refreshing. Yeah,
it's like, stop trying to make the flute a thing, you know? Like, the dick hat didn't work.
So, some of our cast members here. The first person to point out is Shirley Cooklin, who played Captain. This role was written specifically for her, and she happened to be married to our new producer, Peter Bryant.
Oh.
Little so, nepotism.
Yeah, so he wasn't using his newfound power for personal gain or anything.
No, you have to see, Captain's going to be like a recurring character. It's going to be great.
Right, right.
Everybody's going to love Captain.
Yeah. And, you know, Fraser Hines, I'm sure, got off to a real good start with the new boss, seeing how he spent the first, you know, week of things hitting relentlessly on her until he found out that he was the producer, that she was the producer's wife.
What? Fraser Hines hitting on a woman?
I know. Who would have thought?
I just assumed it always happened the other way around.
And we also have Michael Kilgariff as the cyber leader. He was somebody who is known for his height and for his voice. And as a radio actor, he was surprised to learn that he'd be enclosed in a costume and not actually be speaking any of his lines.
Oh, man.
Oh,
but
man.
Apparently the director specifically wanted him for this role.
So the one thing that I'll say, and you referred to him as a cyber leader.
Yes.
I was trying to refresh my memory. I mentioned this before we started recording, but it bears repeating here. I was so engrossed with this serial as we were watching it that I did not take as many notes as I usually did because I didn't want to like look away or, you know, like I found it really entertaining. So as I pulled up the article on this particular serial to give myself a little refresher, since it's been about a week since we watched it, I did not realize that this character's name was the Cyber Controller, which I like so much better than Cyber Leader. Or I don't think he actually gets name checked.
Yeah, cyber no, boss. I think they call him Cyber Controller in the credits eventually.
No, I believe Klieg at one point, actually, he's like yelling down the hole. He wants to talk to the, at least he mentions Controller. So like, he's got a name.
All right. You
know, I was just thinking of him as the suppository shaped one.
Yeah, that his head is pretty lewd.
Yes. Yeah.
It's practically a nacelle. Like, it's like, I don't know if you probably didn't get this impression, but like, I guess you gotta see
Andy,
it,
like, I couldn't help seeing his face without being like, this guy really loves cocaine.
Yeah. And also, like, in the colorized version, for some reason, they decided to, there's like this kind of texture on his head, and they decided to like colorize the veins.
Oh, no, so, no.
Yeah, oh boy. No. Boy, did he look like a scrotum.
Yeah, no, he is the second most phallic alien that we get on this show.
What? Like, next season, what do we have? Like, the Dick Balzians? Or
eventually.
We are making full use of being non-rated now, by the way, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he practically has a glands. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, he's a dickhead.
Yes, literally, yeah.
So, as we've already mentioned, in terms of missing episodes, there are none. This is our earliest fully extant Patrick Troughton story. This story was initially junked in 1974, and for many years, it had the reputation as the great lost masterpiece of the Second Doctor. It was found in a Hong Kong TV studio in 1991.
Wow.
Wow.
Shortly after John Pertwee had been brought in to record narration for a new audio release of the story.
Oh, wow. So they were going to like literally just like dub a new one, and then they found the original.
I think that it was just linking narration for the original audio, track.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that, you know, that's kind of like a, like basically like a book on tape, you know? Yeah.
Radio play kind
of thing. He runs across the room.
Yep.
Oh, I was going to say, I actually was watching Doctor Who on PBS, I think in 92, when it first aired in America. They said, this is one of the first airings of this recently discovered Second Doctor story in its entirety in the United States. I did not appreciate what I was watching at the time. It was just like, oh, it's another Doctor. He's kind of funny. I like this one. I should see some more.
Yeah, good luck. Especially then.
Oh, yes.
Shawnee, I don't know if you remember this, and we might have even mentioned it before, but I think this is the only Who that I'd seen any of.
Yeah.
You had a kind of a greatest hits series where you were showing serials. And I couldn't stay for very long, but I did see part of this serial, so it was kind of exciting to have it come up here again.
So yeah, this story was shown publicly for the first time on April 26th, 1992, to great applause and praise. And in its first week of release in May 1992, it was the top-selling VHS in the UK.
Wow.
Outselling the other major release, The Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
Take that, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Take that, best movie ever, maybe.
Yeah. And during the 50th anniversary festivities, this was the story that was shown by BBC America to represent the Second Doctor.
Good choice. Mm-hmm.
You know, if I got the evil of the Daleks, I'd be happy as well.
Oh, well, I mean,
that one on. Was pretty rad.
I would use the underwater menace.
Oh, God.
You monster.
Have a strike. Merman strike.
I'm just going to cost some fishmen until they help me.
Yeah.
They're too busy dancing.
Do some work, you lazy fish bums.
We're the only people who work around here. You would starve without us.
So this story is estimated to be set around the year 2570. And the planet name came from a deleted line from the moon base, which indicated that those Cybermen were from the colony on the planet Talos.
I think that's really interesting because they specifically mention the moon base incident. Which also...
Yeah, they're trying to do canon. Yeah.
No, like that was actually very exciting to me because this show does not do that sort of thing very often. It also is notable that despite there being all sorts of like interesting time travel stuff in this show, things that happen to the Doctor tend to happen in chronological order.
For now.
But why do it at all?
Really, Doctor, for an archaeologist, you seem to be curiously lacking in curiosity.
Some things are better left undone, and I have a feeling that this is one of them.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's all too easy, isn't it?
Easy?
We start with the Doctor showing Victoria and any potential new viewers the TARDIS and explaining things to her. Victoria responds to the wonders of the TARDIS by commenting that he must be very old. And we finally learn how old the Doctor is, about 450 Earth years or so.
Oh, I was going to say, he also claims to have perfected the TARDIS. So he's still claiming to have invented it at this point.
Yeah, despite the fact that we see that somebody else has one as well already.
And the fact that it's a chameleon circuit or whatever it's called has been on the fritz the
yes,
whole time.
Yes, forever. He's perfected it to be much more fun.
They don't know where they're going ever.
Yes. Yeah. See, much more fun.
I perfected it to be like not as good.
We also see that Jamie is much more comfortable with the Doctor at this point, where he's just like, oh, try to make it a smooth takeoff.
Yeah.
Right.
The Second Doctor gets this huffy Colin Baker-esque, a smooth takeoff? A smooth takeoff? What nerve. I was kind of hoping that he was going to jostle the TARDIS at that point, but... Save it for later.
No, he's just showing off for Victoria.
He does seem to have kind of a flirtatious thing going on with her.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know.
And any woman on screen, basically.
They kind of screwed him in the airport episode anyway. So, you know, he's got to get it where he can. Right?
In a quarry, we see a group of people on an expedition. They blow up the side of a mountain and find a pair of doors. They cheer and everybody rushes toward it.
Shawnee, I don't think you mentioned, where was this outdoors area filmed? Because it looked very, looked like a quarry.
Quarry-like?
Or something. Yep. Yeah,
it was like. I'm sure.
It is 100% a quarry. Pretty much any time they're outdoors and it's rocky, they found a random quarry and filmed in it.
It's just like, it had a kind of a, like, I don't know, Southwest U.S. feel or something. You know, like, it didn't seem particularly, it's not what I, the kind of landscape I would think of when I think of the U.K. So it did look kind of alien.
They use quarries constantly on this show. It is probably the most used external set that they go to. Kaftan, the woman in the group who is funding this expedition, offers £50 to the first person to open the doors. A guy rushes forward and gets electrocuted when he touches them, giving us our first ding.
Shocked the shit out of him. He was like, I think that's probably the, how many times does somebody get like just shocked to death in this
electrocuted
episode? Are we only counting
times
the doors? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Cybermen get somebody too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's kind of embarrassing to die for that little money. Yeah. I guess back then it went further.
Yeah, but in like 2570, that's probably like 5 cents.
And oh, yeah, that's a good point.
The economy is going to have completely turned around. £50 is going to be worth like $50,000.
Yeah, let's
today.
Go with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they even, like, you know, for that one, they definitely shot quite a few sparks to, like, drive the point home.
Yeah. This guy is dead.
I liked the arcing on the doors, too.
Yes.
How that blackens the doors where he touches it.
The Lichtenberg figures from whenever. Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually.
Thinking of which, I noticed the art next to the door, the cyber figure.
Yes.
did the Cybermen do that? Do they have like this concept of what they look like, and they need this kind of Art Deco representation to remind everyone?
There was that one artistic Cyberman many years ago,
and he was executed for it being illogical.
Yeah.
I just love it. Like, from the moment they walk in, it's like, guess where you are? It's like putting my own face up, like, all over my house. You know, it's, I did not understand that part of it at all.
It's artwork by Cybernardo de Telos.
I thought they were left there maybe, like, as a warning or something, and, like, we were gonna, but no, it's just their thing, man.
Yeah. Gotta mark your territory somehow. Better than cyber urinating on everything.
It's just oil. What I kind of don't understand is, like, it's not on the same scale as the Daleks, right? Where, like, they've taken over the Earth before. But, like, the Cybermen are bad news, should be, like, a kind of a avoid at all costs, kill on sight kind of, like, alien species, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why on Earth would you try and open the doors of, like, a tomb with them on it? You know, like, I understand, like, science
what
has gone too far.
What was their motivation again?
Like yeah,
didn't
they just wanted money. Or
archaeology. Science.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, but they did. I remember them saying something about trying to explain to the doctor that, like, you know, they knew something of the history of the Cybermen. Like, they were, like, looking for their planet or whatever. But,
yeah.
Well, their planet is gone. But, like, maybe this was just, like, curiosity. Like, because this is the only, like, remaining Cybermen that exist, as far as we know, in the story. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't even made clear on the moon base where those Cybermen had come from, as far as I recall.
No.
It would have if they hadn't deleted that one line.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, they immediately hear the TARDIS noise. And some of the crew rush over with weapons drawn to investigate. The doctor and friends appear and get questioned at gunpoint.
Like you do.
The doctor, however, is much more interested in that dead guy on the ground than the guns pointed at him, and rushes over, saying that he appears to have been electrocuted trying to open that door. Thank you, Dr. Obvious. Perry, or as I called him, Beardo, the expedition's leader, explains that they're archaeologists searching for the last remains of the Cybermen. This is their home and their city. Hopper, the expedition's pilot, and his crew look at the corpse and are basically like, well, we out. You ain't paying us enough for this, you know?
He is like very...
aggressively American.
And he's like aggressively just disinterested in being part of this story.
It would have been nice if he like hadn't been part of this story as far
he's,
as I'm
yeah, because like, he's very aggressively disinterested in acting as well.
I mean, he basically, his whole role is to stroll lazily into pretty much only the first room that they ever go into and announce that the ship's not fixed yet and I will be back when it is done, goddammit. And then he storms out again.
He's like, it's going to take 3 days and suck.
And then he's
also there to mock Victoria, right. Call her Vic, demean her and say, oh, you should wait here.
Yeah. And I like that, like his second in command stays and is like, yeah, he's basically the worst. Vic.
Yeah, he's like that all the time. I just remember one time where he came in and it was more or less like, where is everybody? Oh, they're down there. It's, you know, it's terrible. He's like, well, sucks to be them. And then, like, you know, still got to go back to fixing the ship now. And it's...
Is that, yeah, Vic, is Vic that has the same really time when he clearly helping. Forgot his lines and took about 5 seconds to remember them before continuing on?
That's about right, yeah.
Oh. Stepping back to when they are telling the doctor why they're there, and I think it was Beardo that says, what we don't know is why they died out. I just wanted like a cut to the doctor going, I don't know.
It wasn't me. So the doctor insists on staying since the Cybermen are involved. Viner, Perry's assistant, stays, as do Kaftan, her giant manservant Toberman, and her shifty foreign associate Klieg, and some random red shirt.
Honestly, Viner was like one of my favorite in this group because he's just like the whole time doom and gloom.
He needed to be on, I don't know, Xanax.
Yeah,
something.
Some kind of like antidepressant, you know.
So the doctor inexplicably decides to open the doors to the Cybermen city and tells them it's safe to open now, but this is beyond my strength. And he suggests the big guy can do it unless he's afraid. Ugh. And Toberman uses his amazing Toberman strength to open the door.
Which was clearly made of wood, and somebody had like pushed it open from the other side.
And there's apparently one point where, you know, Patrick Troughton and Fraser Hines are holding it shut with their feet, from what I read. So the doctor tells them all to be careful. There's danger ahead, but they just march right on in. And we get this hilarious moment where, you know, the doctor's like, come on, take my hand, it'll be okay, not looking, and grabs Jamie's hand. They start walking in, the doctor looks, is like, ah, throws his hand down and goes and gets Victoria.
That was ad-libbed, wasn't
it? Yeah, that scene was ad-libbed by Troughton and Hines.
Yeah.
And they decided to just throw it in because, one, they figured that they wouldn't bother to stop it just for the recording, just for that. And two, this was around the time when they decided it would be fun to indicate some sort of relationship between the two, if possible, when they could. Oh,
that's great. I mean, they've been in that phone booth a while. like nobody knows.
The reason
knows
that
when
their hands
home.
Are so awkwardly high for that shot is because they didn't know where the camera was quite going to catch, and they wanted to make sure it was on
it
the
needs
film.
To be on
so they
camera.
Put it up at head height so that you definitely see they were holding hands.
They'd better not crop this out.
Yeah. So that's the kind of set we're on now with Troughton and Hines around.
Yeah, and this begins the portion of the episode that I like to call like Night of a Thousand Switches. Like, it's just everything. So many switch flips. Like, they blew the switch budget on this one for sure. There's even like a scene, I remember at one point where he's like, well, you have to hit that button first. You gotta hit that button and flip the switch.
They like pretty much do it all in the same way. And then like halfway through the serials, they're just like, nah.
Hey, whatever, just like pull the lever.
Right, yeah.
Pull the lever, Kronk.
William Hartnell would have just started screaming at and punching people if he saw that.
Right, the man with the system.
Yes. So, inside, all the people on this expedition, all these archaeologists, don't notice all the doors in the wall, and they're ready to just give up again because this seems to be the only room in here. And the doctor, once again, has to, you know, show them, hey, there are doors there. Let me show you how to open them. He explains that this place is based on symbolic logic, like with computers. Does this explanation make any sense whatsoever, computer guy? Does anything that they say about logic and computers and all, like, track in terms of actual computering?
Well, when they started to go off about the binary stuff a little bit, I was like, this stinks of Kit Peddler, you know? But, like, it's not like, I mean, what was he again? He was like a eye doctor?
Yeah,
wasn't
ophthalmologist.
He?
Yeah.
Ophthalmologist.
Right. So, you know, I mean, he clearly wanted to do his homework as, of course, he's the science advisor. And I'm certain he had a chair with his name on it. And it's clear that, like, he had read, like, some issue of Omni or something and, you know, tried to get as much as he could out of it. So, yeah, but no.
I wasn't really following what was going on. It was just, like, gobbledygook.
Yeah, I mean, they tried. He tried. I mean, he did use the word binary, like, at one point. That was pretty good. And, like, as we all know, modern computers are filled with shaving cream. So, like, yeah, they got that right, at least. Yeah.
The magical smoke.
So, yeah, Klieg is very interested in this, as Klieg is part of the Brotherhood of Logicians, and he questions how the doctor knows all this. The doctor cheekily responds with, I use my own special technique, keeping my eyes open and my mouth shut. Starting his relentless, snarky attitude toward Klieg throughout this whole serial.
I mean, this particular episode does a lot to establish that the doctor is clearly, like, the smartest person in the room.
Yes.
So he's, like, much smarter than Klieg, which is funny because Klieg goes on and on about, like, how logical and intelligent he is while making a bunch of really dumb decisions and leaps. I don't know. It's just kind of funny. They have, like, a team of experts that are, like, all outclassed by one man.
Yeah, well, it's also important to note that this one man is constantly saying, you know, this is all very dangerous. You guys really shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be moving forward. And let me show you exactly how to move forward. That thing that you should not be doing by any stretch of the imagination. Don't do it. Here you go.
Don't do it. But this is how you would do it.
Yeah.
Right. It's Chaos Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's not actually Chaos Doctor because there is a method to his madness, which is always proving that he is the smartest, the most clever person there, and he can't help himself. It's just like, oh, you've done this wrong. You should do it like this, but don't do it like this. Oh, no, really, don't do it like this.
Well, and we're not there, but, like, Victoria is like, should we bounce? And he's like, nah.
Right.
Or when Klieg is going over the levers, and the doctor just walks up and pushes a button. It's like, why? Why did you do that? You actively don't want them to do this. I have never understood that until I realized, oh, he can't help himself.
I had wondered if he was trying to sabotage Klieg so he wouldn't get it done.
Nope.
But then it worked. So I was like, oh, he just wanted them to actually get it done.
So, yeah, they split the party here to explore something that you should never, ever do. The doctor goes off with Perry and Klieg and makes even more snarky remarks about Klieg's credentials as an archaeologist. Jamie and a random red shirt find a little stone mouse, followed by a musical sting. Victoria stays with Kaftan, Toberman, and Viner. And Victoria is annoying Viner by asking about what everything is as they're looking around a room. Viner thinks that the room they're in might be the room where the Cybermen are made, while Kaftan suggests it might be where they are revitalized. Elsewhere, the Doctor warns that some things are better left undone, as Klieg has trouble working on a mathematical sequence. Which, of course, the Doctor shows him exactly what he's doing wrong.
So, the time period that Victoria comes from certainly has guns, and knowing Maxtable, she knows what a gun looks like. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
She goes to the sarcophagus, the revitalization chamber, and stands, like, right in the path of a barrel. I'm like, this is regular companion logic. Let's put ourselves squarely in the face of danger for no reason.
Yeah. I was impressed, though, by the quality of that prop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was actually a really good-looking prop. Yeah. That could not have been inexpensive to build for a very specific purpose.
And then, you know, here Victoria does something that I can't imagine anybody would ever do in real life or in a random D&D game run by Tom, and she climbs into the weird sarcophagus.
Exactly. This is like a... She has no preservation, self-preservation instinct.
Make a will save, Victoria. You succeeded. Nothing happens.
When Tom was running a D&D campaign, the very first session, my character climbs into the random stone sarcophagus at the very beginning of the dungeon.
He made his will save and nothing happened. If he had failed, it was a very, very easy will save. But if he had failed, he would have simply said the sorcerer's name and been teleported to the end of the dungeon. Campaign over.
And we just lost half the audience. Goodbye, folks. We're really sorry.
Half the audience? You can't have half of one.
I love you, baby.
So Victoria climbs in, and just as, you know, the switches are being flipped, and she gets trapped inside. Viner desperately tries to figure out how to get in, determines, okay, she's still alive, and rushes to get the others. Kaftan decides to start messing with the chamber's controls, but the Doctor arrives in time and stops her. The Doctor finds the right sequence to free her, and she comes out saying, between gasping breaths, "I didn't like that very much at all, Doctor." Which was very true, because Deborah Watling was very claustrophobic, and she had a really hard time doing this scene.
Whoa, method acting.
Yeah.
But like, Viner is kind of great. He's like, "I don't want to touch anything because it could kill her." Captain's like, "Doo-doo-doo."
Yeah, Captain's just like, "Ooh, killer."
And what did she think was going to happen? Like, did she think she was going to cyberize Victoria? Or...
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, how else are you going to learn if you don't do it?
True. And she had a volunteer already in the box, so.
Yeah. So why not? Just flip the switch.
I did like Viner being, like, a professional, at least, about archaeology and saying, don't touch anything.
Yeah.
We have to take notes on all of this before we do anything in this room. Meanwhile, the other two are like, "What's this do?"
Yep. "What's this do?
Check it out. It's the mind control box."
Yeah.
He's a good scientist in like a science fiction show with like a bunch of morons.
He's a good scientist in a story written by a bad scientist.
He also has very good self-preservation instincts.
It is hard for me to watch a serial like this, though, from, like, our 21st century viewpoint where, you know, like, there are things that exist, like, I don't know, Alien or, you know, Prometheus. I mean, I just named two things from the same series, but
there are plenty. The Mummy Returns.
Yeah, there are plenty of...
Mummy, the Scorpion King.
But there are plenty of examples of people bumbling around in like alien ships or like ancient tombs that like are messing with stuff that they really shouldn't.
That's pretty much how it was done.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
Shani's
kind of right, right?
Because it's being derivative, right?
Well, yeah, and there were certainly archaeology is often, you know,
messier than
support.
You think
well,
it is.
And it's support. Yeah, and it's support. Like typically, you'll have somebody who actually knows what they're doing, and then like a whole host of people who you know have to be taught how to brush dirt correctly or whatever, and you know.
And that one weird
lewd,
cultist
don't
guy.
Give a shit.
That,
yeah. Well, I mean, every expedition needs one of those.
Yeah, no, you really do. You really do.
So elsewhere, Jamie thinks that his stone mouse moved. And, you know, there's some gobbledygook about patterns on the wall that mesmerizes them. The doctor comes in and tells them to stop touching things. A gun appears and fires, dinging the red shirt. And we see a Cyberman standing there as the episode ends.
Now, technically speaking, Jamie did hit the button, so Jamie dinged a guy.
Yeah, Jamie's a murderer now.
Well, he does have an incredibly high kill count. I mean, for a companion. He's killed Daleks. I think he's killed more Daleks than any other.
But did he beat a Cyberman to death with his hands? Like, that's the most important question. And the answer is no.
I mean, he has a gun in his hands when he kills some Cybermen. It's kind of with his hands.
Yeah, that gun, by the way, they're like, we'll get to the gun.
Yeah.
You mean the cyber gun?
Yes,
the stupidest name for any. It's like,
look,
I was like, there's no fleshy protuberances. I'm pretty sure it's just a gun.
So we move on to episode 2.
And you will not interfere.
Watch her, Jim. She moves blaster.
Right.
Oh, you scream real good, Vic. Thanks a lot.
It turns out that it's not a real Cyberman, just a cyber mannequin in a target practice room.
Right. So they you know, I mean, that makes sense. You'd shoot at what you know.
Yeah.
Just like, it'd be great if they had like a, you know, like a shooting range and all the like little silhouette targets have the handles on their head and everything. Like,
it would be great if all the targets were Patrick Troughton's face.
Yes. That would actually be
pretty awesome.
We need something humanoid to shoot at.
The worst thing that's ever happened to us.
So Viner freaks out about yet another corpse and wants to get the heck out. Very reasonable, I might add. As they leave the room, Victoria picks up the stone mouse, saying, "Look, it's a fossil." The doctor takes out his diary and says, "It's one of those," and points to it. Troughton forgot his line here and just ad-libbed that before saying, "It's a cybermat, leave it alone." And so, of course, she sticks it in her handbag.
In fairness, it's very cute. Like, the little cybermats are genuinely adorable.
Well, until
except
the close-ups.
For those haunting eyes.
Oh, no, the close-ups are, they have these big googly eyes. They're just, I want one.
Yeah.
Whereas the big cybermats are more like, eh.
It's like something you'd put inside a ball and throw at other people who are also tossing balls at you.
It's something that lives under logs. Like, that's let's be honest.
So I have to ask, was there any, like, are there any notes that we have about, like, the naming of the cybermats? Because it just seems like such a weird name for this thing.
Not that I'm aware of, no. I have no idea why they called them that.
I'm going to blame Patrick Troughton forgetting that there were supposed to be cybermites and just saying cybermats.
That would be better.
See, that would have worked. That would have worked.
It's
yeah.
possible. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if it was William Hartnell, I would definitely say, yeah, that's what happened. So they bring the body to the main room, where Klieg is trying to logic a code out. Parry calls a meeting to say that, okay, we're abandoning the expedition. 2 men have died, we didn't prepare enough, we're going to return to Earth.
I really appreciated this, because this seems like the logical, like, this is something that doesn't happen a whole heck of a lot in Doctor Who, where somebody says, you know, this is just like a bad scene and we need to extricate ourselves from it. I was like, yes, this is what you should do. This is what you should do before you open the door.
Yeah. So Klieg and Captain object, but Parry says this decision is final. Then Captain Hopper arrives from the ship. He says, you know, the fuel pumps are busted. We're stuck on this planet. Viner continues his freak out, insisting that they should return to the rocket. But Hopper says they can't. They need room to work, and it's going to take about 3 days to fix.
Now, one note here, before they get back to the main room, Toberman walks in and says, it is done.
Ah.
And so there's just, you're not sure what is done. And then the Hopper comes in and says, the fuel pumps have been busted by someone. And the doctor says, or something. Toberman's standing behind them just out of focus, but he gets a big grin on his face.
That dick.
Toberman! But yeah, the doctor points out, you have another reason, don't you? Someone sabotaged it. And Hopper says, yep, and no one's getting on the ship until we figure out who.
That last got glassed.
And I have in my notes here, Hopper's American accent is amazing.
Oh, it's... Oh,
oh, I had atrocious.
No, it's...
I mean, amazing, atrocious, same thing.
We're not getting amazing on that ship caps until we figure out what's going on.
I was like, is this really what we sound like to them? I'm so embarrassed for all of us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very clear, right? Like, he's brash, he's opinionated, and he wants to have control over the entire situation. The only thing they didn't give him was a gun and a burger.
Hey, it's better than the gunfighters when, you know, they thought when they thought Americans sounded like Canadians.
Hopper has a very strong Midwestern 1930s cowboy accent, I think.
So Klieg exclaims that he's cracked the code, and this is where he starts inputting stuff into the computer, and the doctor pushes a button to help him along, while also, you know, continuing his anti-Klieg snark. A hatch in the center of the room opens. Victoria immediately wants to go down the hatch with everybody, but the doctor tells her, no, I want you to stay here and keep an eye on things, while indicating toward Captain.
Well, so at first it's like just like sexism on the part of the expedition. They're like, leave the ladies up here.
Yeah.
And like he's able to talk her out of that, which was a very good move on their part. But
it's the second time it happened, too. The first time they were like, OK, the ladies will wait here. And Victoria's like, I'm not waiting here. We can make our own party. That worked out really well for her.
Victoria, by the way, I think this is our first real outing with her, isn't it? I was very impressed. I enjoyed her through this entire serial. Like, you never quite know what you're in for with a new companion. You could get a Vicky or you could get a Dodo. I agree with my earlier assessment that people named Victoria or Vicky are cool.
She does demonstrate good agency and bravery, so... I think she was a big step up from a number of previous companions. She does scream.
Yes, well, everybody has to.
But she very cleverly at one point uses the scream to distract the bad guy.
Andy, are you feeling any better about her so far now that we're talking about her?
Yeah, actually, you know, she's fine. She's a good shot at one point. And yeah, she seems relatively capable. So we'll see. I mean, you know, like she's no Barbara yet, but we'll get there.
Who is? Yeah.
An Aztec god, apparently.
So the doctor insists on taking Toberman down into the hatch with them and tells Victoria to be very careful. So, of course, once everybody goes down into the hatch, Victoria immediately takes her eyes off of things. And Captain puts something into her drink. The men go into the ice caves beneath the city and find the tomb of the Cybermen, a gigantic honeycomb.
I could not help but think of Hollywood Squares. Here. It was amazing.
I mean, like, the part where they, like, start to, like, gyrate around felt to me, like, very, like, 1960s, like, crazy party. And, like, because, like, I mean, they flip the switches or whatever, and they start to move. But then somebody's like, they're moving. And it's like, well, that doesn't look like what they're doing to me. Like,
Cyber it looks girls like, in cages.
Yeah, it's like they're it was dancing.
Almost, yeah, or like,
cyber swingers?
Right.
Or,
do
or
you
like,
party?
Like, Chicago or like
yeah,
something
very much
like that.
Yeah, it was like it was like the world's weirdest Broadway musical. It's like somewhere there's a calculator really turned on by this.
So while there's some cybering going on downstairs, upstairs Victoria passes out and Captain closes the hatch. Downstairs, Viner freaks out as per usual as it shuts, and Klieg says they can open it from here as he begins entering the code, while the doctor says, if that is the opening device. As Klieg enters the code, the honeycomb tombs begin to heat up, melting, and we see the Cybermen inside. Viner freaks out and pulls levers to shut it down. Klieg pulls out his weapon, shoots Viner, and holds everyone at gunpoint as he restarts the sequence. Does Viner ding here? I can't remember. Do we ever see Viner again?
No, I think that is the end of Viner.
Yeah, he dies.
Okay, so rest in peace, you poor anxious soul. he said, and you know, he explains that he's doing this for logic and power. His Brotherhood has the logic. The Cybermen have the power. He shall be their resurrector, and they shall help me. And the Cybermen start emerging from their tombs.
Flawless. I was thoroughly, thoroughly confused when he first said he was part of the Brotherhood of Magicians. It's like, wait, there's a... Oh, logicians. Okay, I've got you.
Oh, look, it's something behind your ear. What could it be? Oh, it is a shiny quarter.
And of course, the Cybermen breakout sequence is the sequence from this story that everybody knows and remembers.
God.
Cyberman versus Saran Wrap.
Where they struggle for minutes on end to actually get out of that thing. It's like, this isn't very threatening, guys.
So upstairs, Victoria's handbag starts moving as she wakes up and she sees the hatches down. Victoria goes to open it, but Captain turns a gun on her, saying that she shall open it when Klieg has finished our plans. Victoria screams that thing has come alive, but Captain won't believe her.
That's the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah, until the thing falls on Captain, who freaks out and is knocked unconscious. Victoria grabs the gun, shoots the Cybermat, and runs out screaming for Captain Hopper. Downstairs, the Cybermen open a door, and the cyber leader emerges with his glorious penis hat and his cocaine face.
Yeah, I like also how his eyes are kind of shittily drawn on, too. Like, somebody did that to him while he was asleep.
Did anybody think it was weird how, like, he was in that box underneath?
Yeah.
And when they open it up, he's squatting there like he's on a cyber toilet with his hands on his head like, I regret all my life choices.
Oh, what did I drink last night?
Why did I decide to be in the box?
I am having a crisis.
The ambulation of shame.
So his headpiece was meant to glow, but it didn't work properly, which is probably for the better.
That would have been awesome. Especially if like the veins like show through.
Oh yeah, no, that's, I'm pretty sure that's how it was supposed to be.
That's the intent.
Ugh. Yep.
Somebody better build like one of those like high, you know, those really high quality there's like companies that make those like really high quality of movie reproductions. You know, like three or four of them. You only see them at conventions. You know, I want my cyber controller with veins and LED kit. Thank you very much.
Well, we're a little bit too close to AwesomeCon, but if you can scrape together a Cyberman costume, that could be you, Andy. Patrolling the halls with your glistening.
Just wear some giant silver headphones.
Right, yeah. Get me some, where am I going to get all the fiberglass? That's the question.
I saw somebody was selling a fiberglass Earthshock Cyberman helmet and chest piece on eBay.
Oh, no.
A number of years ago, and I was, it's like, I could do this. I could put together a Cyberman costume. And then I realized, then I'm going to have to wear this at conventions. And it's not going to breathe at all, and I'm going to die.
Yeah, I'm surprised that like there was not like any kind of like actor revolt or anything like that. It must have been miserable in those things.
Yes.
Yeah, those costumes look pretty uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, but you can see the hinge in the back where the headpiece will just slip right off. So they
that's good, at least. I mean, it reminded me a bit of the, you know, the Gort costume from like The Day the Earth Stood Still. And like, you know, apparently the actor in that was just like in absolute agony and hell for the entire thing. So,
oh, God.
Yeah.
And he just had to stand there the whole time. Yeah. Okay. So Klieg introduces himself saying, "You live because of me." The cyber leader grabs his hand, throws him to the side, and declares, "You belong to us. You shall be like us." And the episode ends.
This is very much a theme, by the way, that like everybody's still just not getting, right? Like,
yeah.
Everybody is like, I got this. Like, I can totally control them. And then like instantly it's like thrown to the side, use him for pieces, like.
But this is what I don't understand. I mean, like, you would assume that you'd have some kind of leverage if you're going to do this.
Yeah, and his leverage was what? His gun?
Like, no, that's later. Right. He didn't even think to get the gun. And that's a crappy form of leverage, by the way. Because the moment you're disarmed, you're cyberized again.
Oh, well, yeah. No, it's terrible.
Yeah.
No, his whole thought was, oh, they will owe me.
They'll be grateful.
Exactly.
This is like, but this is exactly like Maxtable. You know, it's like, we had a deal. It's like, okay, but you know, like, I don't really, I've evolved beyond deals. You know?
Daleks and Cybermen have no need for deals. Like the cyber leader says, Cybermen don't make promises.
You probably can't remember your family.
Oh, yes, I can when I want to. And that's the point, really. I have to really want to bring them back in front of my eyes. The rest of the time, they sleep in my mind, and I forget. And so will you. Oh, yes, you will. You'll find there's so much else to think about, to remember. Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
We move on to episode 3. And continuing her fun serial, Deborah Watling was sick with the flu during the filming of this episode, but she still showed up for work.
That is the mark of a trooper.
Yep. The cyber leader notes that they recognize the doctor, and the doctor realizes that this tomb was a trap for superior intellects, like him. The cyber leader says that they will become the first of a new race of Cybermen and help take over the Earth. Jamie exclaims, "But we are humans. We're not like you." And the cyber leader just states, "You will be.
You will be."
Yes, thank you, Tom. Everybody already knew we were nerds. We made our own Doctor Who podcast. Okay.
Right. Like you knew what you were getting into, and you know what? You heard that shit about costumes and you're still here, so deal with it. It's just gonna get worse.
Cybermen grab everyone as they all speak in that Charlie Brown adult voice.
Oh god. My favorite is like the like Cyberman in conflict or exertion sound. What I like, it's just like
I have the note down, cyber babble.
Yes.
They can totally speak, but like every time anything goes like even remotely wrong, they're just like, and it's hilarious. They're so shitty.
My toddler does this continuously. I'm just used to it.
Oh, God, he's a Cyberman.
Cybermite.
Yes.
Behold, the new terror, the cyber toddler.
Oh, that would be a great Halloween costume. Cyber baby.
So upstairs, Victoria tries to explain to Hopper and his second-in-command, Jim, about what's going on, but they just seem to be humoring her. Meanwhile, Captain grabs her gun and threatens to kill them all if they don't move away from the board. Victoria screams, distracting Captain, and the men disarm her and open the hatch.
Now, in fairness, the last time Victoria screamed like that, there was actually a threat. So yeah. Captain had every reason to be like, oh, what?
And this is where Hopper says the immortal line, "You scream real good, Vic." something that does become a running thing with Victoria. She does, in fact, scream real good. Hopper starts going down, and Victoria once again wants to join him, but he says no. And we get some exchange along the lines of Victoria saying, oh, to be a woman, and Hopper just responding with, how would you know? Haha, because she's a child. The cyber leader informs Klieg that he's going to be altered and made the leader of the new cyber race. And, you know, we'll eliminate all the fear from your stupid human brain. Then everybody's going to be frozen and entombed until we're ready to use you.
We will survive. We will survive. Oh, as long as we know how to love, we know we'll be alive.
Okay, that's too far.
Hopper starts throwing smoke grenades, confusing the Cybermen.
I did like that. I know that that's like pretty much how it would go off too, but it just looked kind of funny. Like they're like, kind of like, boo. I'm used to big American explosions.
Yeah. Come on. He's American.
And instantly all the Cybermen are confused and stumbling around like, what? What? Wait, what?
Yep. While all the humans know exactly what's going on, they make a run for it and only Toberman is captured. And they note, this humanoid is powerful. We will use him.
Yeah, you are going to use all of them.
Yeah. As they shoot him a couple hundred times with their electric rays. All the others managed to get out of the hatch. A Cyberman tries to pull the doctor back down, but they manage to close the hatch on it as he tries to bang his way out.
I was really hoping that the hatch was going to like close on his arm or something and like hack off his arm. That would have been quite cool. I do like the markings on the hatch as the Cybermen try and just punch their way through it. That was pretty neat looking.
And if you notice, when he comes back down, the back of his helmet is slightly ajar and there's a rip in the costume. So they did some physical damage there.
And much as we were just saying, Klieg insists, you know, that would have gone much better if I had been in a stronger bargaining position.
Yeah, no joke.
And he and Captain are taken to be guarded in, of all places, that weapons room. Inside, Captain immediately finds a cyber gun. And she says that the important thing now is to control the Cybermen. She gives Klieg the gun and says, you have a gun. Now they'll have to obey you, or, you know, you'll shoot the controls and seal them in their tomb forever. Klieg goes on a bit of a rant about getting that doctor, while Captain's just like, dude, we're here to do some work. Downstairs, the cyber leader gives the order, release the Cybermats!
And that's where we first see the big ones.
Meanwhile, everybody decides to take a nap, while Victoria is left on guard. The doctor yawns, startling her. She was supposed to wake him for his turn, but she decided to let him rest due to his advanced age. They have a nice little chat here.
This was one of my favorite moments in the entire serial, actually, because they had some continuity. There's like some character building and development, especially with Victoria. She's brand new. I thought it was a really great scene for two of our main characters.
Yeah, it's absolutely like the big dialogue scene that you see of Patrick Troughton's whenever they're playing a Patrick Troughton clip. It's usually going to be, you know, his little talk here with Victoria.
I'm really quite lively.
It's funny, too, because sometimes these can feel like kind of filler or taking away from the action, but I thought this particular one was very valuable.
Yeah, you know, they talk about her father, how she's wishing that he was there with her. The doctor talks a bit about remembering his family and, you know, about how they live in his mind and, you know, he can pull them up when he needs them.
I thought it was nice and pretty sweet, but then, like, just remembering Maxtable in the previous serial. Like, obviously, Victoria's going to love and miss him, right?
Well, her father was the other guy, not Maxtable. Just remember that. Her father's...
Why...
Edward okay. Waterfield, while Max DeVille is the kill.
Yeah,
guy.
No, for some reason I'd forgotten and thought that her father was Max DeVille, because I was like, oh, he really was just the worst, but of course she's going to... No, yeah, I guess he made the vow to her father to take care of her.
Yep. Yeah,
that guy was pretty cool.
So yeah, and here he notes, you know, our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. No one else in the universe can do what we're doing. So as she goes to rest, cybermats are crawling around. The doctor wakes everyone up as the cybermats kind of attack. They're surrounded by a couple of these things. And the doctor lets, you know, us know that they're a form of electronic life as he rigs up some wires to fry their tiny little metal brains. So ding for a bunch of cybermats, I guess.
And the doctor delivers my favorite line of the entire episode. You might say they've had a complete metal breakdown. And Jamie immediately goes, ooh.
Oh, that one's really bad.
he sets up a kind of a, like, we've seen them jump, so it was kind of surprising to me, but I think he takes like a power cable and like sends an electromagnetic charge through it so that the encroaching cybermats get fried.
Yep.
It's like kind of impressive that something so simple would do that. Like, it's very like low tech.
Yeah.
Kind of warfare.
That's the problem with electronic life form.
I saw Andy roll his eyes when he said that.
Well, I mean, fortunately, they had a scientific advisor writing the episode, so he could explain all the necessary scientific details of electricity versus little robots.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure he was probably the one, too, that was like, all right, if we need to make smoke come out of it so it looks dangerous. Smoke out of the rope.
So Klieg appears, saying, very good, doctor. Now let's see what you can do against this, and fires his cyber gun, and we move on to episode 4.
Okay. Cyber gun, awesome, by the way. They clearly built it like so that it would I mean, it doesn't always shoot straight, of course, but like like the little smoke torus that kind of shoots out of it, I thought was so friggin' sweet. It's definitely the best.
It's a like, great prop.
Alien gun prop we've seen on the show so far, I think. Unlike the rest, which just basically just shot smoke like fog straight out of the end, or like the Daleks gun that was so bad they had to like invert the colors so you didn't know.
What, you didn't like the sparkler thrower?
The sparkler thrower was fine. I'm talking about the one that looked like more like a watchmaking device or whatever. Like, just, yeah, not great. And so I remember they just sort of had to like, okay, well, how about if we make it like flash, like invert the color like a few times so it doesn't look so ass? And everybody's like, sure, that's fine.
Killed man. Never pass. Told the man.
Officer Jim pushes the doctor out of the way and he gets it in the shoulder. But he's still alive and Victoria helps him out. Klieg insists that he can still bargain with the cyber leader and opens the hatch, calling for the controller. Meanwhile, Cyber Toberman has been prepared. The leader appears at the hatch and Klieg threatens him with the gun. The leader agrees to listen. He is told to release Toberman and does so, while also sending some type of electronic brainwave to him.
This effect was hilarious.
And yet, this has got to be one of the first examples of that kind of like, you know, Batman the TV show like style, like overlay effect where they, yeah.
We've got like these, what, I don't know, stereoscopic looking waves.
Yeah.
Right.
Between like their two images, their two minds.
How do we demonstrate brain waves communication?
It was so
cartoons.
Awesome.
Let's use cartoons.
And apparently Jamie can see these because, you know, he notes, hey, doctor, something isn't quite right here with this. The cyber leader is running low on energy. And Klieg agrees to help him revitalize in return for some devices that can be used to take over the world.
Because he's logical. He's intelligent.
Because he's a tiny lab mouse.
He's definitely a great logician, what with that whole hey, you remember how I had a really reasonable plan and then they threw me to this side of the room and said I was only good for spare parts? Well, I think I can do better. It's definitely going to work this time.
It's like, I need to maintain leverage over this guy. Let's juice him up.
Yeah.
I like how 500 years in the future, we still have electronics losing power after being put in a refrigerated state.
These are really old batteries.
So Klieg takes Victoria with him as a hostage and I guess sends Kaftan and everybody else to revitalize the cyber leader. So the doctor helps the leader into the machine and operates it and says, you know, he knows what he's doing. Once the door is closed, the doctor says, well, he's much better off in there than he is out here with us. So now let's make sure he stays in there. Jamie ropes up the door to the machine, but the leader just Kool-Aid mans his way out and sends cyber orders to Cyber Toberman or Cyberman.
And then the doctor says, remind me to give you a lesson in tying ropes, Jamie. Yeah. Even though the cyber leader clearly just busted straight through the ropes. This is entirely the doctor's fault, and he's just shifted all the blame to Jamie.
Oh, doctor. So Toberman knocks out Klieg as the leader says Cybermen do not make promises. Kaftan ineffectively tries to shoot the cyber leader with her baby human gun, but it does nothing and she gets dinged.
Finally.
The doctor does some fancy talking about his mistress's death to get to Toberman, who picks up the cyber leader and tosses a very obvious dummy into the controls.
I love that this is actually a mirror of the fight that he had with the Cybermen before, where the Cybermen picked up Toberman and threw him into the controls.
Yeah.
As a note, it was extremely hot in the studio on this particular day because, of course, it was. It's Lime Grove. It's probably still smelling of monkey urine. And as Cooklin was here playing Kaftan's corpse during filming, she fell asleep. They actually did have to stop the filming because of her snoring to wake her up.
Oh my gosh.
The doctor convinces Toberman to destroy the Cybermen. The two go down into the hatch while the doctor refuses to take the gun with him. As everybody is not paying attention, Klieg very obviously gets up, grabs the gun, and follows them down into the tombs.
Yeah, it was very frustrating.
The doctor has a lot of faith in Toberman's strength. Like, this is a bunch of Cybermen.
It is not ill-founded, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Toberman is the strongest man in the world. He is a Toberman. So, in the tombs, the doctor tries to freeze the Cybermen, but Klieg stops him, insisting that he will become the new cyber leader. We find that Jamie snuck down as well to help them, but he's promptly captured.
Oh, Klieg.
The doctor humors Klieg a bit, talking about Klieg the all-powerful, describing a perfect Klieg-ruled world, something that Klieg is very happy about. Until the doctor says, now I know you're mad. I just wanted to make sure.
That was a good
Unlimited
line.
Rice pudding, etc., etc.
So Klieg goes to kill him, but decides to leave him to the Cybermen. Then a Cyberman grabs Klieg from behind and immediately dings him.
Okay, I loved this so much. I laughed out loud because he was just like, maybe they'll use you for spare parts. And then just dead, like instantly. there wasn't even a pause. Normally with that trope, right? The guy's like, you know, smirk. And then they go and then they die in the next room and everybody feels vindicated and they find his dead body or whatever the fuck.
Nope.
And in this one, it like he barely even finishes the line and then he is yanked off screen. it was so sudden and so hilarious and so very funny to me. I don't know.
Toberman wrestles a Cyberman as the doctor and Jamie mess with some levers. Toberman dings his Cyberman, who oozes foam out of his chest unit.
Okay, I want to talk about this too, because I was
shaving
like, okay,
cream panel.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, those auto lather machines are expensive. So, you know, they spent a lot of money on that one. But, you know, I'm like, okay, well, this is very clearly like, you know, they're going to kill the one colored person left, you know, like, and he kicks the shit out of that thing. Like, there's like close ups of like interlocked hands. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is the part where he's gonna like, you know, slowly stop moving and they're gonna play dramatic music. And nope, he like rolls that sucker over and like Captain Kirk double fist down on the chest plate and then like rips it off for good measure, whereupon it foams to death. And you know, I gotta say, pretty metal.
They very cruelly make us think that Toberman might actually survive.
I
want to point out that the Cybermen die in a lot cooler ways than like Daleks do.
Yeah, is this the first time they foamed?
They melt.
I think that we saw some foaming in the animation on the moon.
They get shot off into space.
I'm not sure if they foamed in the actual, you know, episode, but they definitely did in the animation.
Right. They're definitely trying to establish that like foamy death.
Foam power.
He shall meet with a foamy end.
So the Cybermen start sealing themselves up in their saran wrap tomes. And the doctor says, well, this time they have to be frozen forever. Outside of the tomb, outside of the city walls, the doctor re-electrifies the doors, the hatch, and controls. With a fatal jolt of electricity if anyone tries to get back in.
This seemed completely unnecessary to me, by the way. I was like, can't they just disable it, destroy it, bury it forever? Do like something, like why do we have to kill?
Nope, electrify it so any other future archaeologists just die. The doctor hates archaeology.
I guess so. It just seemed like unnecessarily spiteful.
It was very much like a Chekhov's Big Metal Door situation. Like I was like, well, of course somebody's gonna die now. Like they gotta, they're gonna shock somebody else.
Just refresh my memory here, because I was looking over and I was listening. What is the impetus for the Cybermen to seal themselves back up?
Just the doctor has flipped all the controls to make it freezing down there again. And yeah, the Cybermen just...
Is that like the only way that they can save themselves,
possibly,
I guess?
Possibly, I guess.
Okay. It seemed very convenient.
Well, I assumed it was the controls had some directive over the Cybermen because possibly. The cyber controller was gone.
Yeah, for me, it was just very much like a thing, you know, the thing kind of situation. Like, they want to freeze now, you know? Whatever, it was done.
Gotta go back into the ice cube tray.
Right.
So... as the doctor re-electrifies the door, the cyber leader gets back up and we get the doctor saying, you know, his line again, when I say run, run.
Yes, I was so excited.
Jamie and the doctor run in different directions to get to and out the door. And, you know, they start closing the doors, but they need something to insulate them. They start pushing against the door with poles, but they can't quite outpush the cyber leader. This is when our strongman, Toberman, starts pushing it closed himself, saying, they shall never pass Toberman.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, he's just Hodor.
Oh my god, he is.
He's 2 for 2 so far. I mean, Clodor, really, but...
Now, is this the second time or the third time that Troughton had used the when I say run, run?
At least three.
He definitely did it in the previous one.
And the first time I remember him saying it is the faceless one. So that's three in a row that he's used it.
So he finally got the catchphrase that he wanted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to do with liking a hat.
Yeah.
Right.
Picks up the cyber controller's penis head and says, I should like a hat like this.
And then he wears it throughout the whole vest. I'm sorry.
If he just took the cyber controller's head and wore it like a trophy.
I mean, clearly that was Klieg's whole deal, right? I mean, he was just like, I want me one of them penis hats.
Both Toberman and the cyber leader are dinged as they fly, but we do see a lone Cybermat has escaped.
This felt very like horror movie trope, you know, like we've defeated the evil,
but there's still something
lurking out
but,
there.
But, you know, that dog runs across the snow at the beginning of the thing.
Right.
So the doctor notes, truly, this is the end of the Cybermen, but I wouldn't like to make predictions, wink, wink. And next time we get the abominable snowmen.
Oh, no.
Now, as a fun future note, there is a future Cyberman story. They're not gone.
Pretty obviously.
What a spoiler!
In a future Cyberman episode, you know, they defeat the Cybermen as is necessary because they're going to, you know, destroy the universe eventually. But after they've defeated the Cybermen, there's one last little Cybermite floating away. So, yeah. There you go.
There always has to be.
Reuse our own tropes. I gotta say, like, as fun as the Cybermen are, like, it has always been really weird to me that we have a show with like two, you know, separate robotic entities, right? One of which is like clearly superior to the other one. So it's just always weird to me. It's like the Cybermen, for me, they've always been just kind of like, oh, it's the, you know,
it's the not
slightly
as good
less
Daleks.
Threatening Daleks, right? Yeah.
I just want to say, when we were talking about the doctor picking up the, you know, cyber leader's head and wearing it as a hat, just awesome. One word came to my mind. Handles. And I won't say anything beyond that.
I know what you're getting at.
The Daleks and the Cybermen represent something very different, though.
Yeah,
Daleks,
I know.
The Daleks are like an alien threat and fascism. The Cybermen are like a dark mirror of ourselves. They're like technically human and communism, kind of.
I get
maybe
it.
Maybe grasping a little bit.
No, it's reasonable.
I mean, like, yeah, I do get. The thing is, like,
if you look at Britain
deeply,
in the '60s, what are they worried about, right?
Then
those
yeah,
two extremes.
Yeah, they're definitely thematically different. But like, I don't know. For me, so far, the whole like intended weight of like the whole Theseian ship price of technology thing has. With the Cybermen, it just hasn't really rung true, I guess, is what I would say. But
I do wish that they hammered on that a little bit more,
because
like they tend at this point to just be like generic electronic baddies, you know. But especially the first serial with them in it, they leaned a little harder into that, which I appreciated.
Yeah. But hey, at least this time they kind of cyber converted somebody.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of body horror that we could be doing that I'm sure at some point we'll get into, but I don't know.
Give it time.
Yeah.
Now, that really is the end of the Cybermen, isn't it?
Yes, Jimmy. On the other hand, I never like to make predictions.
So let's move into our discussion wrap-up and our reactions to this. Are we giving it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a meh? And since Bay has already kind of indicated where he
hell
is...
Hell yeah, thumbs up.
That's all you want to say? Hell yeah?
No, I figured you were skipping over me, so I just wanted to make it very clear.
Andy, how about you?
I mean, yeah, I'd give it a thumbs up too. It was... You know, for what it was still pretty good. And there were a lot of like fun, kind of wacky, you know, moments. It doesn't really do much to establish really anything more interesting about the Cybermen other than that they have like, they've got pets now and they've got a leader with a dick for a head sometimes. And that's it, right? Like, that's kind of really all we've got. And like, you know, they just didn't really drill down on it, but like it's also wacky and kind of weird, and you know, I mean, it's bordering on, I guess, a meh for me, but it's thumbs up because it's, you know, it's a full existing serial. We get to see Victoria in action a little bit, you know, And yeah. And also, like, there's at least two villains and a half villain with a redemption arc. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's all right.
I'll give, like, the actual analysis that I had kind of, like, glossed over. This serial, I liked its horror movie, haunted house, you know, Egyptian tomb kind of roots that it was harking back to. Almost everybody in it is doing a great job, except for the captain. He sucks. but pretty much everybody is, like, on. I really like the guy who played Klieg. I had hoped that you would have some more notes about him, Shawnee. Because, like, despite the character being stupid, despite all of his, like, touting his logic and intellect, he was really quite dumb. But the actor was doing a great job. I liked Captain. She's, like, kind of a dumb Lady Macbeth. and we had some really... I thought we had some, like, really humanizing moments, I thought, with the Doctor. We get a little bit of his lore. We get a little bit of, like, a nod to continuity in the series, talking about events that have happened in the previous serial and in the moon base. We get, like, him being warm with Victoria, who, like, has her first good outing. And I actually thought that his redemption of Toberman was really important for the character, too. You know, like, he's firmly in, like, team humanity now, you know? It's like, he basically has made an appeal to this guy who got turned and, like, just through the power of will kind of reverses it. So I thought there were some great things in this particular serial, and it's just, like, a really strong start to this season, I thought. It's nice to see everybody's face, yeah. Frankly.
All right, Tom, what about you?
Well, I tell you what, Vic, that was prettier than a little red wagon going over a hill at sunset.
that fucking guy.
I did not hate Hopper. I mean, he was earnest. He tried his best. I have to give it 2 thumbs up because, I mean, it's just a really good story. It's a solid story. You've got great character development. You've got actually really outstanding sets considering the tiny little budget that they had. They do, I mean, it's heads and shoulders better Cybermen than their first outing. Literally, heads and shoulders. And yeah, it's been a favorite of mine for a number of years.
And yeah, I'm going to give it a thumbs up too. I enjoy, you know, the adventure story aspect, the, you know, mummy movie type thing. Reminded me of lots of, you know, fun things like the original mummy movie, the 2000s mummy movie, Scarface, you know, with the cocaine cyber leader. Ha, ha, ha.
There you go.
Ha.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Ha.
It's also cleverly done in that it's a siege story, but it doesn't really feel like a siege story.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a defensive position at any point. They're just kind of like wandering around.
It feels like a containment, like kind of containing a threat that will get out. That's why I was like,
yeah,
we've got to keep them locked in the tomb. And oh, by the way, we fail because it's a classic horror movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Looking at our viewing numbers for this. This one, it went up each episode. It started at 6 million viewers and ended with 7.4 million viewers.
Nice.
So, you know, that's a good sign.
I will be shocked if this does not end up being the highest rated of the Cybermen serials that we've seen so far.
Our reactions at the time. Sidney Newman made it a point to personally congratulate Peter Bryant after he watched the first episode. The second episode, Cliffhanger, receives plenty of praise. A portion of the audience wrote in to indicate that this story was overly violent, though Pedler and Davis had actually wanted them to go further. They had written for the cyber controller's dickhead to explode.
Whoa!
Nice.
The bit with the Cyberman's foaming innards was especially controversial. And it led to Kit Pedler appearing on a show called Talk Back to debate violence in Doctor Who.
Wow.
You can't show shaving cream on television.
So our more modern reviews. So as I mentioned, this story had the reputation as being the lost, you know, Patrick Troughton classic. When people finally got around to see it, the general consensus was, you know, this is pretty good, but it's not quite the masterpiece we had expected it to be. Mm-hmm. It's a little clunky at times and so on. The AV Club's review of it says its flaws are awfully apparent today. The Discontinuity Guide praises the first two episodes, but says once the Cybermen finally break out of their tombs, they just kind of go right back in. Space Helmet for a Cow points out how the Doctor warns everyone about the folly of what they're doing while doing everything he can to help them progress.
Uh-huh.
This is on brand.
Yeah. Elizabeth Sandifer says that, yes, its reputation was overinflated, but not enough so to justify the degree that a certain segment of fandom has turned against it. She also points out that the Doctor's inexplicable actions here, as the expedition was about to give up until he let them in and lets them move forward at every stage. She does, however, express frustration with this era of the show, calling it an endless succession of identical Base Under Siege stories, and ends by saying, frankly, it's tough to complain that the BBC junked most of these stories.
Ouch. Like, ouch.
Speaking of the segment of fandom who doesn't like this story, there's the About Time books. They say nothing could have lived up to its reputation, but what we ended up with is a clunky romp. They get the feeling that the original tapes have been mixed up by someone who doesn't understand the technology and keeps putting random scenes and random music next to each other.
Somebody's sabotaging this story. It has to be better than what we ended up with.
Our modern consensus with our polls. The 2008 poll puts this at number 25 out of 200.
There you go.
In our 2013 poll, it's number 23 out of 241. And so our later impact, well, our impact of this story and some stuff that has come through it.
That might be one of our higher rated serials of all time.
Yep.
You know, I'm trying to think of one that was like more...
Last season, we had The Evil of the Daleks and The Power of the Daleks, which I believe were both above this one.
Those were very strong, too.
Yeah. So we have our new production team set up in Peter Bryant and Victor Pemberton. Except Victor Pemberton ended up scuttling these plans when he decided, you know, I don't actually want to be a script editor. He decided I'd much rather stick to being a script writer. And so he decided to leave the show at this point. Bryant would return to being the script editor, and Innes Lloyd returned from his vacation to learn that he was still going to be producing the show. As for the story and its influence later on in the future, this story in particular and Patrick Troughton in general served as the primary inspiration for Matt Smith when he was preparing for the role.
Hmm.
Huh.
But yeah, that is everything that I have to say about this one. So next time, we'll be talking about The Abominable Snowmen. I would like to thank Tom for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, just tweet at us, send us emails, join our Facebook group, subscribe, rate, share, let everybody know we exist. We want more than just one fan.
If we haven't scared you away by now.
Guys, anything you want to say before we go?
You will be like us.
The ship's finally fixed, so I'm out.
Nobody gets past Shauner, man. Good night, everybody.